Hey y'all, what's good? Welcome to Wake Up With Love. I am so glad you chose to start your morning with us today. This is a sacred space cultivated with spirit, heart, and purpose designed to support you in becoming the greatest expression of the massive blessing you came into this world to be. So let's get into it. What is good, beautiful people? How are you doing out there in this big, beautiful world today, or on this big, beautiful earth today? I pray that you are here with us and that together we will cook up some beautiful vibes, some great energy, a deepening of validity in oneself, in who we are, who we came to be, the individual mission we are on, and the grace of God that is guiding us and leading us into everything we came to be and express in this time. We are live on Saturday morning with the professor, John Puno. Welcome, John.
Hey, thank you. Buenos dias.
What is live? Great to be back on time with you. Once again, beautiful listeners, the call-in is 516-387-1257, 1257, 516-387-1257. We designed this spot for you to call in with us. I have the blessing of having the professor as one of my closest friends, and therefore access to the professor. I wanted to create this platform, as John knows that having a ear to the people and being able to share himself with the people is a big deal. And so here we are for you. Mm-hmm. I pray you take this invitation. And, you know, John, as we were doing the pregame, I realized that maybe intimacy today is just my communication to the people, and then we'll jump into you with the second fruit of the Spirit. Does that sound?
Sure.
Okay.
Well, I'm sure it's connected, so.
Yeah, always. Everything, right?
Yep. That's right.
You know, what happened is John and I have had two or three of these phone calls, and we've enjoyed the conversation. And then every time after the conversation, people, there was a like an inkling of uncomfortability. It's almost like a pebble in my shoe. And so I would always want to call John right after it just to check in to make sure how the flow was. And for some reason, every time in those check-in calls, we would go to town and have a feast on something, right? And last week after we did it, I really realized I believe it was me. And what it was is my desire is to show a new face of leadership, and knowing that each one of us are meant to lead when the problem or the need for solution is right within the wheelhouse in which God created us for. And that if we know each other and we know God's plan on our life and on each other's lives, we're in great position to begin to kind of face one another for the moment when it arises, because we know what their gift is and how it used, and we can know if the situation needs that, and then we trust them. And so one of my offerings is that I be completely real with the world, that you get to see my growth, that I'm not going to pretend that I have it together to be worthy of your ear or to be worthy of your heart or to be worthy to say that I have guidance in me, that I've been sent to guide through things that I've walked through, even though I'm walking through new things right now. And so, and today I'm going to practice intimacy. Into me you shall see. And I think it's the first bar to true connection. Without intimacy, there is no true connection in my belief, that we have to be courageous enough to be willing to be seen as we are in our imperfect, perfect reflection of the divine working itself out, having a beautiful human experience. So I pray and I hope that you pray with me, that I find the courage continually moment to moment to say the thing and allow it to work itself out with me in the conversation. Because as long as we keep talking, we'll always find the solution. So that is my intimacy discussion, announcement. What do you think, John? How'd I do?
I think it was great, man. I mean, intimacy is not into you, into me, you see, is not easy.
No, That's
right. It's not easy because, it does require a certain level of self-awareness to get intimate.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that's a missing piece of the puzzle with people is just, I've noticed a lot of defensive, antisocial behavior. Let's just say in children, for example, I have three children and just watching them grow up, you see this with their siblings, especially, there's that difficulty in being intimate with each other. It's you're gross. So you're my sister. You're my sibling. Get away from me. Don't hug me. Don't touch me. And I realize a lot of that just comes from lack of self-awareness. They love each other. It's obvious at many times that they love each other. But then there's also times where they just, it's also obvious that they don't know how to express their emotions to each other. And so I think as we grow up and become so-called adults, we still struggle with a lot of those same issues from our childhood of just being insecure and questioning, our own selves and then taking that out on others. So, yeah, I think intimacy requires self-awareness. It requires vulnerability, being tender, being open. It requires receptivity, being able to receive. Some people are really good at giving, and we've been talking about that recently, givers.
Yeah. Yep.
But some of those same people are terrible receivers.
Yeah.
And a lot of times people will do it in false humility. Oh no, I'm not good enough for that. Give that to somebody else. Give your praise to someone else. And it's like, no, I'm giving it to you for a reason. And so just receive it. And I think it is difficult. Think about when someone pays you a compliment out in public. It's hard to just receive the compliment. Thank you. So I've been working on that. Someone, for whatever reasons, whatever it is, I like your hair. Sometimes I get complimented on that. And it's just like, thank you. I don't have to say like, it's nothing, blah, blah, blah. Oh, I like your blouse. You have a pretty blouse. Receive it and keep moving. And I also like to say, if I do something and people are praising me for it, receive it, but then give the glory to God. I can't give to someone else something that I have not received myself. So I have to receive, if someone's giving me praise for whatever it is, I need to be able to receive that praise. Thank you. It's been a tough walk, but here we are. I'm so, I'm so grateful for you for noticing it. Tell you all praise to God, all glory to God, because I could not have done this without him. So I receive it first and then give it. But a lot of false humility will say, oh, it was nothing. It was that person, Joe or Mary Sue. She did all the work. I didn't do anything. I just sat back. This is just another form of pride masking as false humility. And so, or just lack of self-awareness. So all these things tie together, right? Intimacy has to do with self-awareness, has to do with being receptive and being able to give and receive and being vulnerable, being able
to
be in a state of being openness, trust. This does connect into, we were trying to figure out, does this connect to our fruits of the spirit talk? And of course it does. Love, joy, peace, long-suffering, patience, kindness, meekness, all of these things, self-control can tap into and be connected with intimacy.
Well, I feel like there was, and it ties in, that there's two things, John, that I think allowed me, there's three things, because you said the word vulnerability, and I'd love to break that one down in a moment. Because there were three things that I felt God gave me clearly that I can walk intimately in integrity. And the one was, I'm a human being having a human experience. And because I'm a courageous human being, I'm often in new lands. I often find myself in places I've never been before. Because I'm always, because growth is one of my pillars of my lifetime, Whether I'm crawling, walking, running, or flying, it doesn't matter. I'm always moving in the direction of growth and learning. And so because of that, I'm going to make mistakes. You know?
Right.
Mistakes.
Yeah.
Mistakes are a part of newness. They're part of beginner mind. And because I did that, I realized, okay, well, I can be intimate if people understand that Love Batista is constantly in new way, in exploring new lands, making new mistakes, growing from them. And when he makes them, I have to communicate them. Oh, I just realized I could have done that better, you know? Or I said this, but I really meant that. Or whatever it is, and just make a communication about it. And as long as I'm willing to do that, I can be intimate. There. And then the second one, and you just brought it up. That's why we're with the professor. So let's go deep. There's a mountaintop when Jesus was getting challenged by Christ, by Satan, right? The devil. Which is interesting because Betsy just said the devil is lived backwards.
Right.
And so when I say I'm always
evil.
Chasing growth, you're evil, right? Is to live backwards.
Evil live backwards and the devil lived, that's right.
Lived, to have lived backwards, is to have been in the hands of the devil your whole life. Like,
wow.
Christ is leading us forward and out and free. So he's standing there on the mountaintop, and I remember hearing it as a kid, that the army of darkness was running to him, towards him, and he put his hands by his side, and he just stood there with his arms open with no fight because there was nothing they could take. There was nothing they could do to him.
Mm.
Did my young mind like add to that, or is that what happened? Because I remember it like locking in me, knowing that Christ was telling me, love, there is a part of you that's untouchable when you're with me.
Yeah.
Like there's something that it's all an illusion of scariness. But there's no, in my name, with me, it's like you just let your hands down. There is no vulnerability because there's nothing they can do. Like,
well,
it just is.
He basically
what is that I'm speaking to?
He disappeared from their presence when they, there was a mob scene basically and a group starts chasing after Jesus because they didn't like, it was actually, I believe, the story where he stood up in the synagogue and he's reading out of the scrolls, and then he basically closes the scroll and says, you know, this is about me. So claiming to be the Messiah, and that's when they came after him. They went after him, and he just disappeared. And
it wasn't that. It was on the mountaintop in the desert when he was being, and maybe it wasn't at all. And I'm well open.
Well, you're talking about when he was being
tempted
by Satan.
Tempted.
It wasn't so much, it may be a mixture of those two stories, but in the temptation, he, at the end of it, he had the angels had to come and minister to him. He just basically told Satan no when Satan asked him to bow down. You know, if you bow down, tempted him with bowing down to him, to Satan, and then Satan was going to give him all the, now people ask, well, like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, if Jesus was God, how can Satan tempt him like that? And the reason was Satan was basically telling Jesus, you don't have to die on the cross. You can forego all that pain and suffering and have the whole world right now. All you have to do is bow down and worship me. So he was tempting Jesus with foregoing his mission.
Avoiding suffering.
And, you know, basically the shortcut, right? Oh, you don't have to do all that.
Yeah.
All you got to do is just worship me, and then I'll give you. Because remember, Satan had dominion. He had been given dominion, or he had won dominion back from humans when humans fell in Eden.
Yeah.
He won it back, so he was in charge, so called, on Earth until the cross. Now that's a whole other story. But this was before the cross, right? This temptation was happening before the cross, so. He still had dominion, and he knew that, and Jesus knew that. So it was him giving Jesus the get out of jail free card, basically.
Yeah.
And so, and then once those temptations were over, then the angels came and ministered to him.
Okay.
So then the other story was him. But it's a similar story where no one had the power to touch him.
Yeah.
He was vulnerable. But he made himself vulnerable when he claimed to be the Messiah in front of a bunch of religious zealots, right, that he knew.
Yeah.
I mean, you know how the reaction was going to be there.
Yeah.
And so he was protected, right?
Yeah.
And it wasn't, and, you know, he, even when he went to the cross, he had to do that on his own free will because he had the power. Well, one, he could have just avoided Jerusalem, let's be real.
Yeah.
You know, like, he didn't have to go into Jerusalem at that time when there was so much volatility.
Yeah.
So, you know, he accepted his destiny, his mission, his fate, if you, whatever. Mm. I mean, words kind of fall short, but he accepted that.
Yes.
The mission is probably the best word, right?
Yep.
And so he willingly carried it out. So at that point, he wasn't
yes.
protected because that's what he had come to do.
Yeah.
But until that point, there was total, like, nothing could touch him, right? He was
yeah.
invulnerable because God was saving him for that moment.
Praise God. And I think every human, we spoke about that before, can relate to that. How many beautiful, mm-hmm. messy situations have we been plucked from?
Right.
In this life. Where how many times we
oh,
love
yeah.
the piece to give... Give the misunderstanding my life wrapped in a bow, neatly, you know, driving 70
oh,
miles
absolutely.
Around cliffs, you know. Hey, if you want me.
Here, that's tempting, here, yeah.
You know, tempting. Like, and it's like, and somehow plucked.
That was the other.
You know.
Yep, that was the other temptation, right? Oh, just throw yourself off of this, the top of this building, you know, this church, and the angels will, protect. Like, no, I'm not
mm-hmm.
doing that.
Yeah,
God
your
said,
God,
oh,
throw yourself off. And, yeah.
Right, prove it. And like,
yeah.
Pass on that one, too.
Hard pass.
So we don't have, you know. And I think that's part of intimacy, too, is being able to know when to, you know, basically when to show off and when to shut up, when to sit down, when to step back, you know, mm. and knowing because it's not always about me and what I want and what I need. And I think that's a
yeah.
huge temptation, right? And
yeah.
even in intimacy, it's like still making it about me. And then that's not really intimacy. That's something else at that point. So that's
yeah.
another key, right? Like, okay, to be intimate, I have to make it about the other person.
It's two ways. It's a two-way. Intimacy is a two-way street. And
yes.
both must feel it, you know? And it's been so beautiful because I've been noticing, John, that when Christ is present, connection builds and energy builds. Like there's a dynamic
mm.
that just happens when Christ is present, and it's the complete opposite when it's missing from a situation.
It is. It's absolutely true.
Which has become, like, I'm always looking because I'm in new lands. I'm looking for staples, you know, to work with to help me. Accustom myself quicker to the new environment since I'm always in them. And that's one thing I've found is that when Christ is present, connection is present, energy grows, intimacy is present. People are willing to say what they're really feeling and why they're feeling it. And they're willing to have the tough conversations and they're willing to listen and not just wait to speak, you know,
mm.
but they're really like,
absolutely.
They're really wanting to look into you and understand why this beautiful meeting is taking place for one moment, for a day, for a year, you know, however long it lasts.
Right. Yes. Yep. It's a beautiful thing. I mean, when it has to be mutual, and when it is, it lasts and it's impactful and it's just a wonderful, intimacy is a wonderful thing when it happens.
Yeah.
It's just getting there.
Get in there.
And it connects to that love piece, you know, because that's the only, love is the door to intimacy.
Yeah. Which brought us to
that,
service.
That agape love.
Yes. So, all right. So, love is the door to intimacy, and then that's perfect. Saying service is the doorway to joy.
That's good. I like that.
In the pre-talk, like you have to enter the state of service, taking your attention off of self to a degree or in totality and place it on something else and then follow it with body and then an action. And in that realm, you find, like, if I may share a story briefly, John.
Sure.
You know, I grew up in the Bronx, New York, in the 70s, 80s. And, you know, we had an idea of a homeless person. We called them a bum, you know. It was very negative. It was very degrading. Stereo, that's how we looked at them as a culture. And that's how we treated them, you know. Get out of here, you know. Don't beg around me. And then, and by the way,
right.
I was raised by in a Christian city, you know. I had the church right across from my house, right, where I grew up in my apartment building. So we were supposedly a very Christian-based neighborhood, and that was our relationship to the needy, was bums. And so I'm 16 years old. I go on a missionary trip with the Franciscans, and we do a we do the food service, right? What do you call that? Where you give out the food? I forget the name of it, but you know what I'm talking about.
Oh,
right?
Like a soup kitchen,
yes.
Basically.
Yeah, we did,
yep,
the soup kitchen. And I realized in my life is that when most people go to a soup kitchen, they choose their side. They don't enter the door of service, really. They enter the pretense door where I stand behind this and I give you food, right? And they don't sit down with the people. They don't, like, really hang out, you know? They make it clear. That's just my own sighting from the several times I've been. But something in me was like, yo, go hang out with these people. I had a blast, John. I'm sitting down talking to them. They were a bit raunchy, and I was young, you know? So they were talking about some things happening in those tents that I was probably a little, you know? I had also seen, you know? But anyways, but one guy said, I love milk, right? He just looked at me. He was like, I love milk. And he had this little cup of milk that they gave him. And I asked the priest if I can have $2 to go get this guy a gallon of milk. And I brought it to him in a black plastic bag, and I brought it in. And as he was leaving, I handed it to him. And he opened up this bag, John, like it was a bag of money.
Oh, wow.
Like I give him a bag of gold. And it shattered all my ideas that all they want is alcohol. All this, the nonsense that they put in me as a kid, you know, that this is who these people are. Completely shattered as these people were like allowed me in to be with them, right? Which was intimacy, I'm realizing now. And then sharing a love, a joy, something that brought them joy, because we put love on high now, right? Last week you really urged us to maybe not use love of God and then love of milk in the same as the same thing.
Right.
Right? So it brought joy to him to bring that. And in the level of
something
joy,
simple,
it broke all my misunderstanding, because that is not what you told me that was. This is like,
right.
And I have a picture of this guy because he moved me so much. I had to like, so anyways,
cool.
That story is that act of service that brought me a level of joy and liberation that I could have never gotten staying in my world, safely behind the soup kitchen, being the generous one, giving to the needy, you know? I was as needy as him. I was as needy with a misunderstanding guiding me, and he broke that in me. He liberated me, who was generous, you know?
It's simple, you know. That's what I love about the story. It's not, you don't have to do anything crazy. Intimacy is not complex or, you know, you got to figure out some special formula. And it's simple. And, you know, I see that even in married life, you know. Married life is difficult at times because you have to constantly be working. But intimacy should not be that way. It should be very simple. It should be it's the small things. That's what I took from that story as well. You know, it wasn't, you got him milk, you know, like
milk.
Such a simple, such a basic thing, but it was what he needed, right? And I think that there's another piece of the puzzle, right? Like you found what this guy needed at that point in his life. You know, who knows?
Yes.
He might have left the streets at some point and at that point, wherever he was, he needed that intimate touch. And yeah. I'm sure to this day he remembers that. And that's how you have a massive impact on someone. So we don't need to do crazy things. We don't need to give away $1 million. We don't need to spend countless hours. But, you know, when we do have those opportunities, you know, I love going down. Like, I'm close to Detroit, so I'll go down to the inner city quite a bit. And, you know, those opportunities will present themselves. I call them street warriors. And so street warriors will come up, and I just love talking to them, man. And if I can, you know, buying them a nice meal or, you know, just when it presents itself, you know, there's times and there's other times I don't, you know, and it's just, it depends on the moment, but it doesn't take a lot. To just the few times where I've some time out and like, hey, even one time I sat down with a guy, like I didn't just give him the money or buy him. I'm like, hey, let's go grab lunch together.
Yeah.
So I took him to lunch and sat down with him, and that was powerful. It was as powerful for me, you know, as it was for him. So that's another thing, you know, the giver and the receiver are both benefiting. And I think more than anything, it's like, you know, I recognize you as a fellow human being, and I'm not looking down on you. I don't think I'm better than you, because that's the trap, right? The trap is elitism. I'm better than you, you know, and then that's tantamount with racism, with any other, you know, bigotry, with any other form of exclusive or elitist thinking, right? And elitist thinking is always, one person is higher or better than another. And so when I reach you, when I treat you like a human, you're on the streets and I take you out, I don't just throw money at you. I'm like, hey, what restaurant do you want to go eat at? And then sit down with you and just have a conversation, man, never see you again. But what an impact on both of us.
Praise God. You know what I'm hearing is humanity. Like that, when you separate it all out and you see the humanity, there's the intimacy. And even talking about being a husband and a wife, you know, like sometimes the role can overshadow the humanity of a situation, you know, like the effect that my wife is having on me. I forget to remember that my wife is a human having her own human experience, and that I've never met a human at the heart of them that wanted anything other than to live a great life, to do great things, and to make the world better in some way. Like I've had 25 years now of intimate work with people where they open up, you know, and allow me to see what's really working. And I realize no matter what they've done, what they're currently doing, or what they might do, has never changed the fact that deep inside is this person, is that energy. Did I lose you, John?
That's right. No, I'm here.
Okay,
I was
beautiful.
Just listening.
I lost access to the screen because I am on my wife's computer, so I brought her up.
Got you.
And it put my screen to sleep. But I know we have a hard stop today in 5 minutes, and so, Professor, what I'd like to ask you today is, we talked about intimacy. We talked about humanity. We talked about courage. We talked about being with the homeless. Like, what could people take from this week's discussion that brings them to, like, action? Like, that makes this time they spent with us is right, which will be 35 minutes, a practical experience for them, as well as informed one, which we're always going to get with the professor, right? We're going to get a new way of seeing things when we talk to the professor. How could they take this teaching of humanity? Because that's what I really heard in your, like, you changed them from a bum to a street warrior.
Right.
And that in itself was alchemy.
That's completely different. View, right?
Right? Yeah, like just changing that in you changed the you know, how many millions, if not billions, of people around the world that are in a state of need right now, you know? And you've transformed all of them from one thing to another just by your willingness to see them differently, which I think is so profound when you said that. I had goosebumps, you know?
Right.
And they are. They're deep. And they have stories, each one of them, each one of us. And so...
That's it.
And, you know, you said, what is the doorway to love is what again? Love is the doorway.
It's intimacy, right? Intimacy and then peace or joy. Service leads to joy.
Service leads to joy. And service is an action, y'all. So I would like to invite you, and I'd love you to close out, John. Like, how can we make that switch? Because like I said, it has to be an intention enacted is service, you know?
Right.
It's a hard intention that you enact. It's one thing to think it. It's the next thing to apply it. And then the application is the walking through the gateway into the doorway to joy. And is there anything you can leave the people with today, or we can leave them with, that like they can practice that a couple of times this week, see if the world is giving us invitations every day we leave our house
to
view people in a higher form and treat them as such.
Well, I think it starts with self-awareness, because, you know, if I'm not aware of these, I'm not aware of my reactions or the labels that I'm using. You know, you became aware that calling people bums is not a good idea, you know, so there was a form of self-awareness.
Yes.
So I would start there, you know, what am I, let's work on becoming more aware of the labels I'm using, the way I'm viewing myself and others. Am I engaged in elitist thinking patterns, you know?
Yes.
I'd say that's step one, is
beautiful,
really observing myself and my habits and my mindset and my, you know, these things to see where I stand right now. Because there is no change until I'm aware of what needs to be changed.
Yes. No, that is for sure a healthy dose of homework for a week is self-awareness. And I want to add on top of that invitation, a dollop of grace when you're doing internal work, guys. Like, breathe with it. This is not judgment. This is not to beat oneself up. This is not to make oneself wrong. That actually often leaves us further from the positive doorway of joy. And so we want to embolden ourselves. Remember, you're being courageous to look where most people won't in the first place. And then whatever you find, you can then do something with it, like John said. Once you recognize the opportunity for change, you can begin the journey of it. So
if
you're with us, you got love in your heart and a hungry mind and spirit as we do. So thank you for joining us for this edition. We're honoring the timeline exactly as requested. I love you and appreciate you deeply. John, the professor, for doing your thing. Next week, call in with us, guys. 516-387-1257, and ask John some of your own personal questions, and bring this conversation even deeper than only two can go. All right.
Good.
Bye for now, John.
Have a
beautiful day.
Love you. Love you guys. Bye.
Okay. Bye. All right, beautiful people. Thank you for listening. If you were moved by what you heard today, you know what to do. Like it, share it, spread the love around. Until next time.